morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks for this Monday, the 18th day of May 2020. I'm David Ellis with you up until 2 o'clock today, and I certainly welcome the opportunity to hear from you on the various issues that are before us in this country this morning. And of course, everything remains dominated by the fact that we are fighting the COVID pandemic. Barbados and other Caribbean countries have done pretty well in trying to contain cases here. The country that has been challenged most of all has been Jamaica, where I saw this morning they have about 520 confirmed cases now. But you've got countries like St. Lucia that had 18 and all of theirs have recovered. And a similar thing, I believe, has happened with, there's one other, St. Lucia is one, and I have to check the other one for you. But two Caribbean countries, English-speaking Caribbean countries, have reported that they have been able to get recoveries from all of the people who had been infected with COVID. So that's a very, very significant achievement for them and by extension for the rest of the region. What's on your mind today? Well, I think there's one person who has something big on his, and he called me about it, so I asked whether he will come online and share his concern early. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir. How
yes,
are you
doing? I'm well. What's your concern this morning?
Yeah, as a parent that has a child sitting the common entrance this year, I'm amazed by the fact that they're actually still looking to hold the common entrance, as well as having it 1 month prior, having school commence 1 month prior for these class 4 students, with the understanding that we're still in the letter system whereby you can only shop for your letter day. It allows all of these children now to be out on the street doing total opposite to what we are trying to contain in terms of the letter system, etc. Children will be children, and we know that children will not take the health and issues of the society and of the pandemic as seriously as most adults should do. And I am really concerned by having the children out in that environment, in a school class setting, for 1 month prior to the 11 plus. What is actually going to happen in that situation with these children? You know, what is your take?
Well, I want to hear, what is your alternative suggestion?
My alternative suggestion would be, because those children have already been prepared for the 11 plus by these teachers prior to the COVID situation being present in this country. So what has been happening, though, is a lot of reviews and so on to get those children, or keep those children, pencils fine-tuned to fit the 11 plus. My suggestion would be, all the teachers should have had the some sort of grading system for the children prior to COVID, where everything is relaxed and they were able to function normally as a child should do in a learning environment. And I'm suggesting that the common entrance should be scrapped for this year, and the mark that the children would have attained prior to COVID should be used as the propeller to get them to the next level, which will be secondary education. My concern is the masks that these children have to wear. We as adults have to function in these masks, and we cannot go for long periods of time with a mask on. Imagine a child in a school environment. And then when you break a classroom down where those children have been with a teacher for the last 2 terms or 2 years or so to get familiar with their practice or their way of operating, to come and break up a class now into multiple classes whereby more than one teacher has to check over these students, it's not going to give them the right platform to sit this 11 plus exam. Because let me face it, you and I may operate well together, but you and somebody else may not have the same understanding. They may not have the same connectivity. And then what? You're going to wait until just before the 11 plus and then pull the mat under the kids?
I assume that you have a child taking 11 plus this year.
I do.
How much discussion have you had with your child on this?
I haven't had any discussion because I believe that this is more of an adult thing that we have to look at. And obviously, the dynamics of my child is going to be different to many other children out there because my child doesn't wear glasses. And to have a mask on with the breath foggily glasses, you've got children with asthma. My child doesn't have asthma, you know, but it's not for my child alone. I'm just looking at the whole situation whereby you have a situation where kids now have to change their whole everything about them because they don't have to function with a mask on. And it is difficult because these kids have not seen one another now for weeks. And you know, they're going to be playing up with one another, hugging one another, and getting to know what went on while they were separated, etc. Kids will be kids. So my concern is, if you're going to break a class of, let's say, 25 students down to make it social distancing between those students, and you can put 6 feet apart. So let's say a class now is divided into four sections of six children in a classroom. You got now four classrooms now that one teacher has to manage now to deal with these 25 or 26 children. How can that really work in their benefit?
You say, as far as you're concerned, what they should do is to scrap the common entrance entirely for this year and use the marks that they would have accumulated prior to COVID to propel right. them to the next stage, that is to take them to secondary school.
Where there will be at ease and everything would have been functioning normally, you know, prior to all of these restrictions, et cetera.
What about using the technology to continue to teach them in the period and to interact with them?
For the period leading up to the common entrance, I would more push for the G Suite since it's been working on my daughter's part fairly successfully. The ministry can log in to see who is there, how they're conducting the class, et cetera, from behind the scenes and so on. So they can monitor, you know, the teacher's ability to work or continue to work or whatever. Everybody is social distant. They have the freedom to go to use their own washroom and inside their own house where it will be safe and so on environment as opposed to a school whereby obviously it is not as safe as at home at you. They can get, you have to look at school meals, you know, are they going to be provided meals at school where not everyone can have meals at school, so they have to bring meals. Not everybody can provide meals, you know, to come to school, but they can get something on the side at home. You know, those are other things that you got to take into consideration. On the other hand, you also have to look at the fact that there are some students out there who may not have access to tablets and laptops, et cetera, that may require these additional tools, which obviously will put them at a disadvantage over those that have access to them at this stage. And also, you also would have parents now who would have to go back out to work who may not be there to deal with the children or to get the children through this final stage prior to the 11+. Because they have to return to work, et cetera. So I understand that section of it. That is why I was more pushing to do the pre-COVID marks rather than the no-COVID marks or the learning that the children are going through at this stage, because not everybody will be on the same page in terms of the technology and the skills that the parents may or may not have in terms of getting the children to work online.
So, in a nutshell, you are nervous about having your child go back to classes.
Very much so, because, I mean, if we have to go out there in a society with a mask on, I can pull one side and take off my mask for 2 minutes, take a fresh breath of air and put it back on. Because I know that when I have to come in contact with people, I know the importance of having a mask on. And when I get home, I take off my clothes at the door, I go straight in the shower, and I thought, how many children are going to do that? How many parents are going to force the child as soon as they get home?
All right, but let me ask you this. If we are mm-hmm. to accept that we have to learn to live with COVID, then we need to be able to get our children to appreciate that they have to live differently. So, I mean, where does one draw the line? It is not only relevant to school, but there are other activities that will require that our children wear masks. So
no, I agree with
shouldn't
that
you there, start that process now?
Not prior to an important exam as the common entrance. I'm suggesting scrap the common entrance and we can prepare for the summer start, which will be September start of the new school year, whereby you have the additional time to, as the country opens up, to get the children and the adults out in society more as a group. you know, interacting a little bit differently, so they would know, okay, well, you can talk to your friend there, but you have to keep a distance and you must have on a mask. But when you do friend and you part ways, you can take off your mask to get some fresh air in to until you come in contact with the next person.
All right, sir. Well, so, thanks for drawing your concern to national attention. I'm sure that this is a matter that many other people want to discuss, and we are here to facilitate the discussion. Thank you very much. This is Down to Brass Tacks, the Monday edition. Hello.
Morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
Morning to everyone. I want to speak briefly on, if possible, on the situation with the Attorney General's office. Mm-hmm. Mr. Ellis, you know, we've been brought up in the society as youngsters, men and women, learning to respect authority. You know, when we were growing up, you respect the fireman, the policeman, the lawyer, XYZ. And to me, it seems as though that it was like more fear that we were taught. Because now when you reach an age, 30, 35 years old, 40 years old, you can't even look at a magistrate or a judge or a police or a prime minister or attorney general and tell them that they're wrong. You get nervous, you get frightened.
Okay. So
you come on Brass Tacks and you talk about it. You go on Facebook and you talk about it. You do video clips and you talk about it. But the fear in actually addressing the substantive matter to the person or the organization, it puts fear in our hearts. Now, we as voters, nationals, citizens of Barbados, who contribute to the well-being of this nation, should be able to look directly into any administration or any person of the administration's face respectfully and tell them where we think that they are going wrong, have gone wrong, or is wrong, and whether or not we should ask for their resignation or should ask that they be fired. Okay? We have a gentleman by the name of Mr. Dale Marshall, who is the Honorable Member of Parliament, and he has the office of the Attorney General. That is not no easy office to run. It's very important. That person is considered the top lawyer or attorney in a country, and you would expect that not only that person, that individual, but all of the other members of Parliament would want to conduct themselves at every given moment as best as they can in the best light so that the public will continue to have the confidence that they continuously speak about. And I'm speaking about any political party, right? The Attorney General, Mr. Marshall, to my understanding, is a seasoned attorney at law. I am sure that Mr. Marshall, Attorney General Marshall, knows very well that when you want to impose or implement something of this magnitude, not even of this magnitude, of any magnitude, because the beautiful men and women that we elect into office, they didn't go there to work on their own. We gave them the job. They asked us for this work, and we gave it to them. Had not for our exes, they would not have it. So there's a level of respect that should be given, okay? So here it is that we have a top attorney who holds the Attorney General's office. He wants to implement something. He knows that there are statutes, rules, and regulations to follow to make this thing happen, and that does not work. If I took the liberty on a job to do as I please and do not notify the people who hired me, I am looking to be fired.
You're taking a long time to basically come to the thrust of what you got to say. What exactly are you saying, therefore?
It's very important, Mr. Ellis.
It's important, but it is also important that you basically, you know, come to the crux of what you want to say about how the matter has been handled. Tell me that in a nutshell.
And I'm actually saying that by saying you have to look to the necessary statutes, rules, and regulations to make this thing happen.
What is your conclusion?
Let me finish, Mr. Ellis. Let me finish, please. That did not happen. If we break the law, we pay the penalty. Attorney General, Mr. Marshall, violated, And I believe that the Attorney General should submit his resignation.
On what basis? I want you to... You just have to tell me on what basis.
Mr. Ellis, I just said it to you.
Violated how?
There is a process that you have to go through in order to make this thing happen. He did not do it. The president of the Democratic Labour Party, even Ms. DePisa came out in a follow-up response in today's...
What did the Prime Minister say? I'm sorry to make you feel as though, you know, you don't have the full reign of the program to say it the way you want to say it. But forgive me, I have to put to you all the information that I have so that when we finish, you know, we don't just see it from one angle.
Okay.
The Attorney General spoke and basically said, yeah, something went wrong. The Prime Minister spoke over the weekend and then said, oh, no. Everything is right. So in that context, where do you stand? Do you accept the statement that came from the Attorney General, or do you accept the statement that came from the Prime Minister?
I do not accept both. What do I accept? I accept the response that came from the President of the Democratic Labour Party, who went and did the statutory research and explained it clearly in an article. And if the president of the Democratic Labour Party knows this, I am saying that the Attorney General knows this.
But you cannot seriously, in this discussion, completely ignore what the Prime Minister said. But this is what you are seeking to do.
No. I am not ignoring it. I listen to all three, and the one that stands out most to me is President Verla DePisa. She went to the statue, and she presented the evidence in the today's paper. So, I mean, what do you want me to do, Mr. Ellis? I'm not being biased here because I'm not.
Oh yeah, let me determine that if three people are going to speak to an issue, and you are going to say to us that you are only going to take into consideration two, and when one of the three happens to be the Prime Minister of the country, then you know you leave people to speculate. Anyhow, I am keen to hear the views on this. Because, you know, as we sit here, we certainly have our own perspective on these things. Sometimes it is more useful to hear the back and forth before you actually say where you stand on these issues. So I want to facilitate the discussion rather than appear to prejudice it at this stage, okay?
You can afford it. I'm not prejudiced in it. I am speaking plainly from listening to three individuals. And the information that stands out most.
Fair enough. So you listen to three, and you only took two of the contributions into consideration. You completely ignored the third. Agreed?
I did not say that, Mr. Ellis. You put the words in my mouth.
Well, tell me. Tell me.
All three, and Ms. DePisa's information stands up because she brought evidence. Statue.
Okay.
You've got to be fair where that is concerned.
And when the Prime Minister spoke, what did she bring?
The Prime Minister did not cite statue.
What did she say?
The Prime Minister cited a recommendation, an order that was.
But she spoke about matters that were laid in Parliament. She talked about what is called secondary legislation. Tell me how you could say she didn't deal with statue. She brought into question the issue of primary legislation, the police act. And secondary legislation, the resolution that she talked about. How can you tell me she didn't?
Mr. Ellis, you asked me. I told you what I heard.
I am telling you that you should have heard more than just two sides of it because there were three.
And I heard the three sides, but I'm saying to you, Mr. Pisa brought up the evidence.
All right, fair enough. Let me not agitate you any further. All right? My sincerest apologies if you think that I did. But all I can tell you is that in discussing any matter, I would expect that we would look at all three of the contributions which were placed before us. And you may very well, at the end of the day, come to the conclusion that you've come to. I don't want to, you know, stand in your way in that regard. I'm just saying that it is only reasonable that we look at all three. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, good morning, David.
Yes, hi.
Good morning, it's Glenn Murray.
Yes, morning, Glenn.
Good. I listened to your opening, Gamble, and I too, like you, share a question of satisfaction in the overall manner in which the Caribbean, including Barbados, is performing its management of this COVID-19 issue. But that, you know, we wait to see development. I hope that, like you said, it's not over, and therefore we still have work to do, and we still have to maintain our standards and whatnot. But there's something aspect of it that I want to go back to. I want to go back to the debate last week between Dr. Waldron and basically his employee, the QEH board, over certain aspects of the management of the COVID-19 virus. First of all, let me say that I thought that you were very clear on Monday when you... I'm not going to rehash the whole thing. I'm just trying to set context for those who understand where I'm coming from. You, on Monday, you had Dr. Waldron who spoke. Then you had, at the same time, you had Dr. Mohammed, who represented the board, the deputy chairman of the board. Then the next day, you had two doctors from the QH, Dr. Ford and Dr. Cave. And you also allow Dr. Waldron to have his say, to answer any queries or whatnot. I thought it was a very useful discussion all in all, and that we got here with things we never knew existed, like the situation of the QHS. Sorry, I've got to start this drip. QHS attitude and approach and policy regarding excluding COVID virus from the hospital, which I agree with and support that wholeheartedly. But I therefore thought that your management of the issue, both on days when you, on Monday and Tuesday, and also was quite fair. And therefore, I thought that you acted professionally and fairly, and that you use your journalistic training and experience to manage the process. I don't think you allowed anybody to go overboard. You brought equilibrium and fairness to the process. But there was an aspect of it that I want to deal with Dr. Waldron. Now, Dr. Waldron did not, with the information at his disposal, his disagreement with the board did not, as could have been then, have a document fall off a truck or leak something to the press or, you know, go on social media and have his say. He chose to go to act in what they thought to be a very honourable manner, where he chose to speak, they say, his truth to power, his truth, his perspective, his point of view, and his approach to the matter that differed from the creative board. And therefore, I thought that he used to be commended for that, because here's a young professional who is going up against his employers, going up against his colleague, because over a professional disagreement of which the board, of which the public had not known. And therefore, I'd like to, there's a principle in some societies, older societies, known as noblesse oblige. For those who are on Google, it's N-O-B-L-E-S-S-E. O-B-L-A-G-E, which basically says that those who are persons of privilege and authority and welfare section have an obligation to the public over and above anything else. And I think that Dr. Rowe, loyalty was not being disloyal to the board. I thought he's being loyal to his perspective on the care he would like to see meted out to his patient, should there be need for surgery.
Okay.
Hello?
Okay, there are a couple of issues that come to the fore. Apart from the issue of trying to make sure that all sides have an opportunity to speak on a contentious issue, there is, before you get there, this question: is it worth putting in the public domain given all of the circumstances?
I thought it was very important.
And therefore, the person who is sitting as the media practitioner or the journalist has to make that judgment call.
Right.
And a lot has to do with at what point are you going to make the call. You can make that call as soon as you are aware that there is a difference and grab at it from the point of view of saying, you know, I need to get it first, I will not be scooped. Or you take a decision, as was done in this instance, to say, go through all of the necessary processes, and if in your judgment those necessary processes fail, then we are available to assist in drawing this matter to national attention, because we concur that it is an important national issue and that it should not really be swept under the carpet. So if we are to be criticized for having taken the decision to allow this matter to be taken to the public, then I'm prepared to sit down and discuss that decision in the context of having concluded that it is an important national issue. After that, you come to the issue of the balance. But let's go back now to the other party who comes to the table, and what is at play here? What is at play? That person has to determine on their own how far they are prepared to go to bring the matter to national attention. I remind people that in the years ago, there was the downfall of Richard Nixon in the United States over Watergate.
Right.
In the Watergate scenario, there was a character known as Deep Throat.
Right.
Deep Throat was within the government and decided that he could no longer put up with what was happening.
Vietnam War.
No, it wasn't over Vietnam. This had to do with the Watergate scandal.
The break into the
Democratic Party headquarters.
Right, that's right.
Yeah. And the lies that were being told and that sort of thing.
Right.
And Deep Throat leaked the information to Woodward and Bernstein.
Right.
Okay? I fast forward to Barbados today, to a situation where 3 years ago, we were discussing the issue of corruption and how Barbados should respond to corruption.
I have whistleblower legislation.
That we needed whistleblower legislation.
Correct.
That people who felt that what was being done was wrong needed to be protected. All right, we talked about this ad nauseum in this country.
That's right.
Now, my question is this. Is that only relevant to dollars and cents? If a person believes that lives are at risk, that person ain't got a right to speak out. Are you saying to me that it is only relevant and important if taxpayers' money is at stake? I don't accept that. I feel that if a person has come to a conclusion that
in their judgment, they have gone
the distance, and they still feel strongly, and they want an ally in trying to help deal with this matter, then what is the role of the media in this country? What is it?
You must accommodate them with the right balance and the right checks.
Precisely.
Balances, which is what you did admirably. Also, I have to consider the question of where does an individual's right to freedom of expression end and where does his professional obligation to an organization of which he's a member begin? I think that his right guaranteed by the Constitution supersedes all that. And he felt that his judgment was that if the wider cause, he needed to go to the wider court of public opinion. And I agree with it because there were a couple of statements. I understand, like I said, the curator's determination to keep COVID out of the hospital. I understand. I understand why they're doing it and whatnot. But there were some statements, and they said that when Dr. Walton raised his concern, some of the comments coming from those who represent the curious on air were that it is not likely that they didn't be likely to happen. So they seem to be making a determination not to follow Dr. Walton's advice because it's not likely to happen. But if it's not likely, it also means it's possible. And what do you do if it's possible? Because I heard some comments, repeated comments, that if something like that were to fall, there's some hard judgments and hard decisions that have to be taken. Now, what does that mean?
Well, I think in all of this, one has to listen to what has come from both sides. Now, one of my mentors sent a message on Friday, it was, saying that it wasn't the role of the journalist to balance anything. It was the role of the journalist to bear witness. Well, let me tell you something. As much as I respect the view of that person, I don't believe that you can bear witness until you have heard all sides. That is when you can be in a position to call it as you see it. All right? So what has emerged so far? At the end of the day, there is an admission that the facility was not up to the highest standard.
Right.
It can be used for addressing minor surgeries.
Right.
And it could be used for surgical emergencies. It was considered that it was admittedly small and that the most complex surgeries could not be done. Basic surgeries could be done, and some alterations have been made.
Right.
All right? This is the crux of the issue. When all of the discussion was finished, there was general agreement that it could not do major surgery. And the argument from the very beginning was, if you can't do major surgery, then certain types of patients are going to be disadvantaged. Now the question, right, so I don't think that we should be quarreling about that, because whether you're for or against or whatever, that is what has emerged.
Right.
And that is what we have to grapple with. All right? Full stop.
Is the society prepared to pay that price?
Well, that's for the society to determine. But you know what? We have helped you to appreciate where we are. This is bearing witness now. We've told you what you have before you.
Right.
Okay?
All right.
Thank you. We got to go. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, David.
Morning.
How are you today?
I'm okay, you know.
Yeah, okay. I must, you know, I don't really congratulate you much, you know. But you see that program you had with the doctors? It was first class. You did what I knew you used to do before as a young journalist. You bring out the truth, the evidence. Anyhow, I want to deal with two short topics and let somebody else get in. Now, the matter with the Attorney General, it is a simple matter. And they know that you, your journalistic skills, you know what's going on. Here it is. Caswell accused the AG about the matter not going to Parliament. The AG upset that something went wrong, but he has to go back to Parliament and make it right. The Prime Minister come out and said that both of them were wrong. Because when, as long as she said that it was there by law before, it either means that the Attorney General does not understand the law. I had no knowledge of what went on, but I'm more certain he was the Attorney General in 2007. Now let me go on now to the Saturday night when the Prime Minister was off with the Hayat issue. It was Saturday night or Friday night. You know, when we get old, we don't remember exactly what time it is.
I think it was Saturday, though.
Saturday. I am the most surprised man. You know what? And you hear me say on this call-in program that listening to politicians and believing what they're saying is a serious indictment on the electorate unless they sit down, as you said just now, and get the facts. Is this the same Mark Maloney? When you know, I saw you, you saw me, when you go to the public meetings coming on to election, a burgundy or red bag used to be pulled. And I heard with my own two ears the sight of figures that was, and it was backed up that no one man should be making this sort of money in this island.
But that was that was a very significant statement that you made, though. No one person.
Exactly.
But basically, my recollection of the criticism back then was that it seemed as though too large a share of the pie was going to this one person or this one entity.
Of course. Now, to my surprise, when I heard that this person was in discussion during all of this talk, you know, this is what the developer said, that he felt good when this project was on hand, but he feels better now it is expanded. Now, if that developer was getting $6,000, the average man, you're getting more. Huh? So that is why I tell people, listen.
But whether you get more or not depends heavily upon the project itself and what value the project is going to bring to the country.
I have no quarrel with that.
Right.
I have no quarrel with that. What I am saying, when that campaign was going on, and Barbadians were angry people like other people, and hearing those statements, I believe that poor man would have been probably hushed and gone, the anger of the people. So we got to be careful. I want to hear NASA on this issue, though. I am inviting NASA because he always coming on here and telling me how the pie should be divided. I want to hear him on this pie. I want to hear. I am not going to take up much time, David, because I appreciate what you did. And when I hear the facts are being laid, there's only one thing I have to say. Did you hear at any time during the COVID issue was going on, have you heard or hear the private sector give contribution to assisting the poor? I heard Jordan Supermarket give contribution. Did you hear the Barbados Workers Union, the oldest union in Barbados that was formed since 1937? There were two, a political party, a union was formed. Did they give the workers anything? You heard of it? If you hear, let me know. I didn't hear. But this would make the workers understand that what we find out, that the people in Barbados was living off a week-to-week salary. But you was hearing all the time that they are concerned more about health and safety. But now you find out that if you tell a man that to repair his business and put his money in his business and don't give the workers the money, you realize now that the business is closed and the workers ain't got no money. But the business physically could bring a price, but the workers can't bring none. The workers out there living off of week to week and not a cent from the Barbados Workers Union. If you hear of any, I will let you to tell you, Paulie. And David, enjoy it.
All right, thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks.
Yes, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well.
Okay, fine. When I call on Friday, as I said, I didn't call for the week. I was hoping to get you on Friday, but unfortunately didn't. When I raised the issue with the daughter on the line, let me start by saying this. Let's not lose sight of the issue that is really here now. The issue ain't about the OB. The issue ain't about you. The issue is, I said it on Friday, when Dr. Waldron spoke on Brass Tacks, it seems to be a breach of protocol. That is the point. It ain't about VOB, I compliment VOB, playing its part in Barbados and allowing people to speak and helping in democracy. It ain't about you, because, you know, you're an excellent journalist. It's about that. The focus is on an employee publicly criticizing his employer. Okay?
Okay, fair enough. I'm prepared to discuss that too.
Yes, right? And I agree with Mr. Carl Moore as well. It didn't move the balance. And so there is...
Well, I can tell you again, there is nobody who can come and tell me that if you have two sides to an issue, that you only want to hear one.
No.
There ain't nobody who can get me, for instance. To, let me tell you. To mount a program.
Uh-huh.
When I know that they got two sides to an issue, and I can only bring people from one side to lambaste the next.
No. That's not the point, man. We very upon the point.
All right, tell me.
Let's focus on Dr. Waldron as a surgeon at the
Yes.
UVA.
Let me hear your... You said that he breached protocol.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
No. They're right, Mike. Well, if you want to breach it, you can. Because to my mind, he did it. There's several people and years gone by. We should have breached protocol.
Yes. Okay.
All
right. Let's look at the issue from this angle, because everybody got a different perspective on how things get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
You have, first of all, to have an appreciation of how this matter might have been fought behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You and I don't have all the information here.
Right.
As to what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That would prompt a professional to get up and say, I put my professional reputation and my career on the line for this.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, what is motivating that professional? That professional publicly said, I am doing this because of patient care. I am doing this because of the threat that it poses to the health of people who are working in this area, and my conscience will not allow me to leave this here.
No, that's not his call. That is not
whose call is it? If you are a professional, let me say something to you.
It's not his call.
Let me put it this way.
Yes.
You can say what you want to say about how you see it, but let me say this.
You too.
At the end of the day, if a person believes that their own professional responsibility is being threatened here. And I want you to remember this.
Right.
When you are dealing with matters of that nature, there is also a distinct possibility that if something goes wrong, you can be sued.
The hospital would take over them.
So if you hear that kind of talk? You hear that kind of talk? So I am saying to you, I am saying to you,
establishment.
I am saying to you, you don't listen. I work for an establishment here, right?
Yes.
You know that if you call and talk foolishness and somebody sues, you know, a person could also sue me personally.
Yeah, but listen.
You know, they could sue Starcom and they can sue me personally.
You could sue several people by any day. The judge or the jury or whosoever will make the judgment call.
It's his call. At the end of the day, it is his call. He will have to determine whether he can deal with the consequences associated with that. That is his call. As much as it is your call to determine how many times you can call Brass Tacks.
But how many times you call Brass Tacks what? I understand the communications, right? I don't call Brass Tacks out of hand. I just call Brass Tacks.
That's your judgment. But you know how many people tell me that they think you call the program too often?
Yes, you know why? Because that they can't deal with personalities.
But it's your call. It is your call. I mean,
but that's something different. You're going over. That's what I don't want us to do. I don't want us to veer off the subject at hand.
Would you agree that in coming to that conclusion, you also have to be privy to what has or has not happened behind the scenes?
You know, I know what's protocol. Anything you work for an establishment, right?
All right.
And now I hear you on several occasions, and correctly so as well. Correctly so as well, because you're correct. Now, if someone calls your program and try to question you about one of your employees or former employees, as the case might be, or be even critical of your moderators, you would say to them, listen, this is not really for the public domain. Let's deal with this off the air or something like that. You're correct.
You know I don't encourage callers to go down the line of bashing the moderators, because I feel that you got to deal with the moderator when that person is there. In other words, don't give them a lash behind the back.
Yes, but I agree with this. But I'm saying that would you allow anybody that calling from an institution in Barbados now, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, say a hotel, Accra Hotel. He's an employee. And he calls your program, and then he proceed to bash ACRA.
Do you appreciate what I said earlier?
Yes, I did.
What did I tell you?
You're talking about that. You just chase balance.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if I have a serious issue that somebody has drawn to my attention, I think I have a responsibility, first and foremost, to say to that person, exhaust all of your processes. Go and sort that out before I come to jump on it and behave as though, well, you know, it's a scoop and it's something big. But let me tell you something, brass tacks. In this COVID-19 period, it don't need the sensationalism. We got enough people listening to this program every day because of the way that we have conducted it. So there's no need for us to do that. We get more feedback here than I've ever seen before. So I have the luxury of being able to say to somebody, go through the process. But if at the end of the day, that person feels that they have done what they had to do and they are getting nowhere, then what do we do as media practitioners? Do we censor ourselves when we have come to the conclusion that it is an important national issue too? Do we say, go, you know, we don't want to hear you? Let somebody else deal with you? Because patient care is not our business. What's happening at the hospital can't be our business. Or what happens in any other institution in this country is not our business. We are just here to do what? To let statsman talk? Down to brass tacks.